You're tuned in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We're on the air because truth matters. Your host is Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. To find out more about CRI or to order resources, go online to equip.org. The Bible tells us that natural evil, including animal suffering, is a consequence of the fall of humanity in Adam. The book of nature, on the other hand, tells us that the earth and universe are old, and thus animal suffering preceded the arrival of humans. How do we resolve this dilemma? To discuss this, Hank welcomes back Dr. William Dembski to the broadcast, who offers a fresh look at the problem of evil in his book, The End of Christianity: Finding a Good God in an Evil World. And now, to start today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, is your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and I want to talk about what you just said, because the sharpest point of contention between young and old earth creationists is death before Adam. Old earth creationists hold all death, including animal death, to be a function of the fall. Old earth creationists believe that carnivorous creatures and natural catastrophes existed prior to the sin of Adam as part and parcel of God's very good creation. And one of the reasons that we're offering the book that we're offering is perhaps the rift is unnecessary. The false assumption underlying the debate is that Adam's sin necessarily precedes the advent of all evil. Of course, we're not talking about the rebellion of Satan here. And as a result of that, young earthers are constrained to reject astronomical and geological dating, while old earthers are compelled to reinterpret biblical passages that speak of natural evil as a direct consequence of human sin. The reality is this: orthodoxy demands faithfulness to truth in both general and special revelation. An orthodox understanding of the creator of all things is that he acts transtemporally in creation. And therefore the cross of Christ can retroactively atone for Adam's sin, just as it proactively atones for the sin of Adam's posterity yet unborn. In similar fashion, there is little difficulty conceiving of a transcendent God who predestines natural evil to precede the fall, even though the fall is the necessary cause of the evils that precede it. Of course, it's natural for us as humans to see time's arrow from a forward perspective. But we would do well to recognize that God's infallible truth is not always presented in chronological fashion. And as such, the advent of the last Adam not only can atone for the sins thousands of years after the advent of the first Adam, but the last Adam is biblically portrayed as a lamb slain from the creation of the world. The bottom line is this: mining the scripture for all its wealth entails recognition that God's purposes are presented in chronological as well as chirological fashion. I'm going to ask Bill Dembski about that word chirological in just a few moments. Bill Dembski is a leader in the intelligent design movement. He's very well equipped to write on the subject that we'll be discussing today. He's a research professor in philosophy at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. He's a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. He's a highly regarded mathematician. He's a philosopher. He's done postdoctoral work at MIT, the University of Chicago, and Princeton University, and he has authored more than a dozen books, including The Design Inference and No Free Lunch. And he's also the author of an article in the upcoming edition of the Christian Research Journal, which I personally think is one of the clearest, most poignant articles we've ever presented, titled Old Earth Creationism in the Fall. And that ultimately is the issue that I want to discuss today. It's an issue that, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, has caused perhaps an unnecessary rift among creationists. And so instead of looking at the real enemy, which is naturalism, Darwinian evolution, the guns have been aimed at one another. And we're losing a war that we should be winning in an age of scientific enlightenment. This is one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about this book, The End of Christianity. And there's a twist in the title. It sounds like one thing, it means another. I suppose intentionally so. The subtitle, however, gives us a hint of why this book is so important. Finding a Good God in an Evil World. And again, I cannot urge you strongly enough to get this book, to read this book, because how one views their origins ultimately will determine how they live their life. And there are so many people today who simply don't know how to think about the issue of origins. On the one hand, they look at astronomical data or geological data, and they see an old universe. And yet, they read in Scripture that Adam's fall is the necessary cause of all evil, and they just can't swallow the notion that evil prior to the fall is not evil. And so they're scratching their heads. They don't know what to do. This book gives a plausible solution to the problem. It's orthodox, it corresponds to reality, and it ultimately allows us to put ourselves in a position where we can maintain both scientific orthodoxy and scriptural orthodoxy, and that's where we want to be as believers. So the first thing you want to do is make sure you get a copy of this book. The retail of this book is $22.99, so it's an expensive book. It's a hardback book. We've taken a real step of faith to just give this to you for your gift to the ministry. So we're praying that you'll be generous, because particularly in July, we need the generosity of people to keep the work going. But you can order a number of different ways. One is on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Another is by simply writing me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or simply picking up the telephone and calling one of our resource consultants at 888-7000. CRI will have Bill Dembski with us all this month, every Tuesday. So this is another privilege to have Bill Dembski on the air, talking about the end of Christianity, finding a good God in an evil world. Good to have you back, Bill.
Good to be back with you.
This is such a significant issue. You have no doubt, as I have, run into so many people who want to maintain theological integrity. The fall seems to account for all evil. And yet, you look at the data, you look at star life, for example, and immediately you think, wow, how's it possible that we live in a 6,000-year-old universe?
Well, You're absolutely right. I mean, because I think what you have to say is, if science is completely wrong about this, then we are basically seeing just a light show where there are no stars or anything behind it, because the science is telling us that light travels at a constant speed and that we're seeing light from galaxies, star systems that are hundreds of millions of light years away. So that light would have had to travel a long, long time.
And what about people that say to you, well, here's the solution. God created his handiwork with the appearance of age, which is, by the way, one of the subjects you address in the book.
Right. I think it just leads to the question, though, about God's revelation in nature, and is God being forthright there? And what does that do about the honesty of God? Now, I think there's a sense in which perhaps, you know, if Adam, you know, I believe that Adam was specially created, okay, so he'll be a full-grown man. But if he's a full-grown man, is there going to be any genetic evidence that he has aged? Or, you know, that I think even if you have something that is mature, it doesn't seem to me that you have to put marks of deceptive marks of age there. And I think that's what we would be dealing with in the science if, for instance, in fact, we're not seeing any further than 6,000 years out, and basically this is just a light show that God has made for us, and there really are no stars out there, or maybe there are, but, you know, it's that history is all bogus. I think that's the question. Is nature speaking truly to us? And I think that is an important issue, and one that the scriptures themselves indicate are an important issue. Romans 1:20 came up last week, where now, Paul is saying that from nature, from the creation, we can tell certain things about the invisible attributes of God, that God is a God of glory, that God by wisdom has created the world. Well, if nature is not speaking to us truly, then how can we even draw those sorts of inferences? So I think it becomes a double-edged sword if you try to maintain this appearance of age, because I think it can end up biting you in the back later.
How significant, Bill, is this issue of the fall from your perspective? There are so many progressive creationists who are saying, look, what happened prior to the fall is part of God's very good creation. Why is it that you can't stomach that?
Well, it just seems to me, you know, and I came to this through the study of intelligent design, and I mean, I'm looking at signs of intelligence in the natural world, and are there patterns in nature that point us to a transcendent intelligence? And I think there's very good evidence of that. But I look also what the stumbling blocks have been for people accepting that position, and probably the biggest one is the problem of evil in nature. And there's an interesting contrast here. I mean, you look at, for instance, at William Paley. Watch in the field. You know, if you find a watch, you're going to infer a designer there. It's a very common watchmaker argument. Well, 50 years later, Darwin takes that argument apart, or claims to, but where he really focuses on is the problem of evil and suffering in nature. If you read Paley's Natural Theology, the biggest chapter is the second to the last chapter. It's about twice as long as any other chapter there. And basically he says, yeah, after all, he goes through all the wonderful things in nature. He says, you know, yeah, there's some death and suffering, but it's really pretty short. Animals don't suffer very long. And he tries to put a nice touch on it. Charles Darwin takes a trip around the world, 5-year trip on the HMS Beagle, and sees the sort of brutality and violence that's out there, humans against humans, but then also within nature. And when you look at some of the things that are going on in nature, it's not just that things are dying or getting sick, but that you've got parasites that seem exquisitely designed to upset a organism. That, I think, really, that's what where I think you really get some problems. So it seems that this can't just dismiss it as though, well, it's something that's, it's really not that bad, and it's not really morally significant because humans are really not suffering it. In fact, I mean, I would say, you know, the evil that we see in nature, those become our prime metaphors for understanding evil. I mean, when John the Baptist will say, "You brood of vipers," you know, I mean, it's things in nature that, as it were, God has put there as a mirror to our own, the sin in our hearts. But that mirror does represent real evil.
That, by the way, is a profound insight, and it's one of the things that you'll find in this book, one profound insight after the other. Darwin did say that. He said, "I can't persuade myself that a beneficent, omnipotent God would have designedly created parasitic wasps with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars." And that conundrum ultimately led Darwin to dispense with the notion of a creator God. In reality, however, Adam, not the Almighty, bears culpability for the origin of moral and natural evil in the world. We're going to be talking about that and so much more when we continue the discussion with Bill Dembski on the other side of the break. Again, Dr. Dembski is author of The End of Christianity, Chuck Colson says this, inevitably it is the pernicious problem of pain and evil that the atheists, that the agnostics refer to as an excuse for not believing in God. And Bill Dembski clears away the stumbling block, offers readers an original way of dealing with the problem which fits with an orthodox view of God's good creation and fits the scientific facts. Again, the book is available as our gift to you all month for your support of the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. Again, all of you know, practically, July is not a good month for ministry. We are in a recession as well. And though we are clawing our way out of that recession, it takes a big impact on ministries like the Christian Research Institute. So please be generous as you order The End of Christianity at www.equip.org. We'll be right back with more of Bill Dembski. Stay tuned.
The problem of evil has been a nagging dilemma for Christianity since the beginning. Today, popular atheists like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and others use it as a way of discrediting Christianity and eliminating the God of the Bible. William Dembski's book, The End of Christianity, embraces the challenge to formulate a theodicy that is both faithful to Christian orthodoxy and credible to the new mental environment. For your gift to the Christian Research Institute this month, we'll send you The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World by William Dembski. Order toll-free at 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will return in a moment. With the vast amount of information flooding the internet, how can you determine what's true? How can you be certain that what you're viewing is reliable? Well, Equip.org is a safe haven with content you can trust. Content that has been well researched and designed to deepen your discernment skills and help equip you to defend the faith. At Equip.org, you can search articles, books, and videos. Listen to the Bible Answer Man right from your computer. Or listen to an Ask Hank program where Hank takes just a few minutes to answer important questions about the Bible and Christianity. You can also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, read our blog, or receive special benefits by signing up for our weekly e-newsletter. Don't founder in the sea of misinformation. Make equip.org your homepage today. Again, the address is equip.org.
Investors are concerned that there's more bad news.
Calling for an end to U.S. military operations.
The world is glued to the news headlines, anxiously awaiting what the future holds. So it's up to believers in Christ to be prepared to give well-reasoned answers about what lies ahead, based on sound Bible doctrine.
That's why The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff is such a vital resource for your library. The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff covers today's most asked prophecy questions and reveals why answering them correctly matters so much in today's world. The Apocalypse Code will resolve many questions regarding the mysteries of the end times and help you give an informed answer for the hope that is in you. All you really need to know about understanding Revelation is what the rest of the Bible has to say. So order your copy of The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff, now available in softcover. To order, call 888-7000-CRI or look online at equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition by Hank Hanegraaff is the culmination of over 20 years of faithful study in answering questions on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With short, succinct answers to over 170 questions that stumble seekers and galvanize skeptics against the historic Christian faith, the Complete Bible Answer Book will give you confidence in what you believe and why you believe it. Written in Hank's concise, three-point, easy-to-memorize fashion, the Complete Bible Answer Book is an essential tool for the beginner as well as the seasoned apologist. Consider it your one-stop Christian apologetics handbook. When you become a Bible Answer Man support team member, we'll send you the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition as our way of saying thank you. Order for yourself, a friend, or get a personalized copy when you call 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org.
you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world. And all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dr. Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means. The radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. As our way of saying thank you for your generous support, we'll send you The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Contact the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Once again, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we'll also send you Old Earth Creationism in the Fall, which is William Dembski's article in the upcoming edition of the Christian Research Journal, so you'll get both those for your support of the ministry this month. The End of Christianity, again, the book, subtitled Finding a Good God in an Evil World, and the article Old Earth Creationism in the Fall. Back to the discussion with Dr. William Dembski on the book, The End of Christianity. And before we get too much farther into the discussion, it bears repeating from last Tuesday, the title of your book, What's the Point?
Well, it's a play on words. I mean, the end there, end can mean the demise, and I think a lot of the atheists would like to read it that way, as the demise of Christianity, but I took it as the purpose or end goal. Where is it all going? What's it all about? And so that's what I was referring to with the end of Christianity.
And of course, the book does deal with a word that many people are not familiar with, but theodicy. How could a good God create a world in which things go so desperately wrong? In other words, we're dealing with the problem of good and evil that we encounter in the world. And at first blush, it may seem as though there are as many responses to that question as there are religions. But truthfully, there are only three. Pantheism denies the existence of good and evil because God is all, and all is God. And then, of course, philosophical naturalism, which is the worldview that undergirds evolutionism, it supposes that everything is a function of natural processes, brain chemistry, genetics, and the like. Therefore, there is no good, there is no evil. So we come to the conclusion that theism alone has a relevant response, and only Christian theism has a satisfactory response. But it seems that evangelicals or people within the evangelical Christian world are mucking things up. And I want to read a quote that you have in the book, Bill. That quote is from Tony Campolo, sure, where he says, God has chosen to not be all-powerful. If God were in control of everything, there would be no such thing as human freedom. In the economy of God, love is more important than power, and therefore the loving God, in order to give us the capacity to love, has limited power, and thus when there are tragedies, he's the first one who cries. What kind of a God is this? What does that do to our fundamental concept of who God is?
Well, I think Tony is moving in this whole open theism, process theism approach, which has very much taken the evangelical, at least certain portions of the evangelical intellectuals, by storm. And it seems to me that that position is just incoherent. I mean, you can't, it certainly doesn't agree with the Christian tradition orthodoxy here. I mean, there's just no way. I mean, divine omnipotence, that God is sovereign, that he is in control, that everything, that he's almighty, that everything is subject to him. I think that's been orthodoxy across the board, Protestant, Eastern Orthodox, Catholic, right along. But this idea, I mean, you know, the classic notion is that God simply restrains himself. He does not interfere with human freedom, or he allows people to muck up things, you know. But to say that God has as it were, removed, you know, has has put himself in a prison, thrown away the key, and now he can't get out. It seems to me that that's just incoherent. So, Tony, I've watched him over the years. I mean, he had a book in 1984, The Power Delusion, which I actually enjoyed, where this theme of power came up. And I think, yes, in the life of Jesus, Jesus didn't flatten the Romans. He did restrain his power. But it's one thing to restrain one's power. It's another thing to give it up entirely. And so in that passage you read afterwards, I make the comparison with King Lear, who did give up the power, and then suddenly things spin out of control. I mean, the problem with this view is if God has really given up the power and we are free, what guarantees are there that God is going to be able to pull it off, that love will triumph? It's a position that I think really doesn't offer any hope in the end.
There are people, though, Dr. Dembski, who will look at your book and think, you know what, you've got a problem as well, because you have a benevolent God who allows natural evil to afflict the world prior to Adam's sin. How in the world is that a coherent view of God?
Well, I mean, if you're going to take that view, then I think you're also going to have to find fault with God for allowing evil in families where parents sin and it affects their children. I mean, it seems that somehow in this life, humans are at the pinnacle. They are the covenant heads, and what they do does affect the rest of creation. And it's this is the way the world has been structured. I don't think I've got anything really much more to offer beyond that. I mean, God, we're all complicit in this life, so God includes us all together, and the animal world as well. And the animal world suffers because of the sin of Adam. But I mean, I think the broader theological issue there is that God is doing this to bring good out of this. And I think an important theme here is that natural evil is allowed because it points up our own evil, the evil in our hearts. We need, as it were, natural evil to keep us honest, to bring us to our senses. What would happen in a world in which we are fallen, corrupt human beings, but there is no natural evil? We don't get sick. We can live out our lusts, live out our evil desires, and do so without any restraint, without anything to bring us back to sobriety. That's actually, I think, a very terrifying prospect. So natural evil, if you will, is a grace. I mean, it's what we said in the earlier portion of this program, you know, that this natural evil is a mirror to our own selves. I mean, you think about the scriptures. I mean, all the images of evil, the wolf in sheep's clothing, you know, the wolf. I mean, that's something from nature. The serpent, you brood of vipers, the snake in the Garden of Eden. I mean, so there are these images. They're really primal, taken from nature, that point up evil. And I think it's part of, if you will, God's school in educating us and bringing us to our senses.
I thought there was a profound insight in the book, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but perhaps I can lead you to think about this aloud with our audience for a couple of moments. But the profound insight was somewhere in the book where there was this aha moment. Adam and Eve, they sin, and now they don't have to wonder what the consequences of sin would be like. They're cast into a world where they see it up close and personal. They're brought face to face with the gravity of their sin because it is already extant.
Well, yes. I mean, I think perhaps the passage or the chapter you're referring to is the one where I do an interpretation of Genesis 1 through 3. And the question is, I mean, if indeed we have our fall is responsible for natural evil, but natural evil still precedes the fall. I mean, this is where it gets a little bit science fiction-y. I mean, you've got backward causation, as it were. But from a divine vantage, it's not a problem because God is, as we said, transtemporal. He's not bound by time. Indeed, He created time. So if God basically anticipates the fall through the fall, in nature with natural evil, then where does that evil reside as Adam and Eve come on the scene? And this is a point I make then in that chapter that I'm referring to. You've got Adam and Eve, they're put in a garden. Now, the garden, paradise, I mean, there are a lot of primal images and metaphors connected with that. But why does God put them in this segregated area when, on a young earth view, for instance, I mean, the whole world, everything is perfect, you know? But they're put in this garden, and then when they get ejected from the garden, they want to go back, but the angels block them, and now they're in a world with thorns and natural evil. And so it seems to me that there are even exegetical grounds for this retroactive view of the fall that I describe in the book.
And, of course, one of the things that we want to learn to do is read the Bible for all it's worth, or, as I like to say, mine the Bible for all its wealth. And this, again, becomes a critical issue. We're talking about the issue of origins. I've said it before. It bears repeating, how one views their origins will inevitably determine how they live their life. We are now in a world in which evolutionism, for all intents and purposes, is winning the war. And they ought to be losing the war because we live in an age of scientific enlightenment. Many of the things that Darwin supposed might be true turn out to be false. The Cambrian explosion, for example, biology's Big Bang, uprooted Darwin's tree of life. So Darwin is left hanging. And we have an opportunity to demonstrate that evolution does not correspond to reality, that creationism does correspond to reality, that it does satisfactorily deal with the problem of evil, that we are headed for the best of all possible worlds, that we have a God who is intending to reconcile all things to himself, that though we live in pain and suffering, and Christianity doesn't give us a peaceful way to come to terms with the maladies of life, it does give us something far greater, because out of creation will come recreation. This universe that now groans in travail will be liberated from its bondage to decay. We ourselves will arise immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. So we have a story to tell. But we want to make sure that that story is cogent and coherent, that it doesn't simply gloss over the facts, either biblically with respect to the fall or scientifically with respect to what the world tells us about God's imprimatur on it. The book, The End of Christianity, does a wonderful job of reconciling the issues, giving you the ability to communicate in an age of scientific enlightenment with scriptural integrity, to use your well-reasoned answer as an opportunity, a springboard, if you will, for sharing the truth, the love, the grace that only Jesus Christ can bring to the human heart. The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, available right now for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. You can check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org, or just call our resource consultants, 888-7000-CRI. Be right back.
You're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Because the summer can be such a dry time financially at the Christian Research Institute, your generosity this month will be especially meaningful. In return for your support, we'd like to help equip you with The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Until recently, every Christian accepted that natural evil was a result of the fall and our own sin. Then evolution undermined the confidence of multiplied millions. Science seemed to show that animals suffered and died long before the fall. But Dr. Dembski argues persuasively that for a God who exists outside of time, all evil, including natural evil, is the result of human sin, whether the earth is old or young. To donate, call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Don't change the station. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will continue after this.
Yeah. It is reading and interpreting the passage in light of what the Bible says, not my imagination.
You've always appreciated the thoughtful, biblically based answers you hear from Hank on the Bible Answer Man. But how can you benefit from Hank's input and instruction in your personal quiet times? You can with the Legacy Study Bible. Hank Hanegraaff has helped to assemble what could be the most helpful Bible you've ever read. Informative and educational articles are written by Hank using acronyms that he regularly uses on the Bible Answer Man, including LIGHTS, showing how to understand the Bible, MAPS, demonstrating how the Bible is divinely inspired and preserved, DOCTRINE, summarizing essential Christian doctrine, and FEAT, an apologetic on Christ's resurrection.
Order the Legacy Study Bible, edited by Hank Hanegraaff, by calling 888-7000-CRI or online at www.equip.org. Don't forget to ask about the personalized edition. Have you ever been asked the question, if God is good, why is there so much evil and suffering in the world? As Christians, how should we respond to this question? In his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, Dr. William Dembski writes to make peace with three claims. God, by wisdom, created the world out of nothing. God exercises particular providence in the world. And all evil in the world ultimately traces back to human sin. In the process, Dembski brings the reader to a fresh understanding of what the end result of Christianity really means. The radical realignment of our thinking so that we see God's goodness in creation, despite the distorting effects of sin in our hearts and evil in the world. Order The End of Christianity from the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Now more than ever, today's believer who wants to stay informed needs to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Here's what you'll find in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal.
The recent tragic rash of suicides among homosexual teens has raised the question of whether Christian teaching about homosexuality inspires bullying and violence against homosexuals. Learn not only how these accusations do not stand up under scrutiny, but also why it's essential that we examine ourselves and our rhetoric in Joe Dallas's article entitled, The Bully Pulpit: When Gay Teens Commit Suicide, Are Preachers to Blame? Other topics include Old Testament storytelling apologetics, the Christian citizen, what skeptics want Christians to know, a critique of director George Nolfi's The Adjustment Bureau, the popular Ask Hank column, and much more.
Call CRI and start your subscription today, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org.
Theodicy, the defense of God's goodness and omnipotence in view of the existence of evil, is a problem many theologians and philosophers have undertaken to solve. Dr. William Dembski offers a fresh look at the problem of evil in his book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. As our way of saying thank you for your generous support this month, we'd like to send you The End of Christianity by William Dembski. Simply call 888-7000-CRI, which translates to 888-7000-274, or go online to equip.org. Again, that's equip.org. We return now to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and we return to our interview with Dr. Bill Dembski. We will try to get a few of your phone calls in as well as you dial 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-275-4265. But, Bill, I want to ask you a question as we talk about your book, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. And this is more of a maybe a visceral response. Sometimes it seems that we find ourselves in no man's land. On the one hand, we're up against the evolutionary juggernaut. On the other hand, if you suggest that it may be true that we live in an old universe, you have people within the creationist community that oftentimes say, well, golly, you're giving up the gospel. On the other hand, you have progressive creationists who don't seem to be reading the Bible in the sense in which it's intended, and they look at passages where God stretches out the earth like a canopy, and they say there's an example of Big Bang cosmology. So they're reading an unintended meaning into the text of Scripture. So you end up in this no man's land between the evolutionist, the young earth creationist, and even the progressive creationist in taking the position that you've taken.
Well, yes. I think a lot of people perhaps are not entirely happy. But, you know, for me, the issue was I needed to come up with something that I could find personally satisfying.
So this is about truth.
You know, and for it to be satisfying, I had to think that at least it could be true. And there it had to certainly agree with Christian orthodoxy, and it had to agree with at least what I took to be well-established science. Darwinism, I think, is the biggest confidence game that has ever been foisted on humanity. I mean, I think emperor has no clothes. I mean, what you referred to with the Cambrian explosion, that's just that's even the tip of the iceberg. The case for Darwinism is getting worse and worse, and yet it stays alive in the academy because there are just tremendous social pressures to keep it alive and to keep any creationist alternative down. So I think that's a lot of what's going on there. But I think, you know, one thing you adverted to earlier was just Christians basically shooting at each other and then missing the greater problem. I mean, the best thing that could happen in terms of undermining the Darwinists is if some of the Christian colleges, Christian universities, if there could be beachheads there where there would be think tanks, research groups that were doing intelligent design research and really taking on this Darwinian view in a place where it really matters. I think too much of the time the Christians were in a ghetto, we talk to each other, and then we shoot at each other within the ghetto, you know, instead of actually getting out and engaging the world. But as you said, you know, then we've got the progressive creationists, the young earth creationists, and we all have different views on this. And what I hope to do with this book was show that, you know, regardless of one's views, that there is an orthodox way of looking, taking an old earth and seeing the fall as still having this preeminent role in all of evil, natural evil as well as personal evil. That it is in the fall that all the evil in the world traces back to. I think I presented a case where this is at least, I think it's plausible. It is a work of philosophical theology. It is, to some degree, speculative. You know, I mean, the science might change. You know, I might look at the scriptures differently. You know, in my own view, I think I'm probably 95% there with it. But you know, if somebody were to show me that, well, hey, this really doesn't agree with orthodoxy, or you know, then I think, you know, I'd back off of it. But so far, it seems to me that it holds together, and it was a way of me trying to come to terms with issues that I was confronting. And also, in part, you know, it seemed to me that I was getting at in that book what was really keeping young earth creationism alive. It seemed to me that the issue was not so much the science, it was this worry about theodicy and natural evil. And I describe in the article that I did for you, Old Earth Creationism and the Fall, you know, how this one video that I saw, I think titled Thousands Not Billions, on young earth creationism, it opens by showing a college student who is being warned by a pastor that be careful when you take science classes, because if you come to believe in a old earth, then basically you're going to have to give up Romans 5, that all that death entered the world through the sin of Adam. And so it was a theological, it was, the issue was theological at the start. It was not scientific. And indeed, it seems to me that the science of geology and astrophysics, which in my mind is much better than Darwin, the evolutionary biology. I think evolutionary biology, that seems to be so much ideologically driven. But when it comes to the evidences for an old Earth and old universe, it seems to me that isn't ideologically driven. I mean, there are all sorts of converging lines of evidence that are pointing to the Earth and the universe being older than just a few thousand years.
Talking to Bill Dembski again, the book, it is a must-read, The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. You can order for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. And by the way, we'll throw in the article, Old Earth Creationism in the Fall, that you can order online at equip.org. When you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, resource consultant standing by, 888-7000. CRI, we've got to take some calls. Let's go to Ron, listening on Sirius XM 131. Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how you doing? I love your show every day.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi, you're on with Bill Dembski. Thank you so much for your kind comments.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm not sure I can articulate this really well, but is it possible or plausible that God put Adam and Eve in the protection of the garden to protect them from what lay outside the boundaries? Because we don't really know when Satan and his followers fell. We do know that he was on earth. He was allowed into the garden to sift Eve and Adam. And I guess I always assumed that there had to be plausible that maybe sin or evil existed outside the garden. And then when Adam and Eve were ejected, they wanted back in, and God had to put that sword there to keep them out.
Well, I think you articulated that actually quite well. I mean, it's indeed the view that I argue for, that this garden is a segregated area, that it's separated from what's outside, and that what's going on outside is a world of violence, thorns, natural evil. The thing is, you know, from a young Earth perspective, there's no purpose for having a segregated area like that, a garden, because wouldn't the whole world, the whole universe, be perfect without the effects of natural evil at that point?
Yeah. And we know that the first rebellion was in heaven. So it to me, that just your book, I can't wait to buy it.
Good. Well, thank you.
And thank you so much for your call, Ron. And by the way, people that get the book, they're starting to pour in the commendations for the book, and this should be encouraging to you, Bill. Dr. William Dembski's book, here's one comment on Facebook, The End of Christianity. I just finished it today. It's one of the most theologically challenging books I've ever read, yet Dembski brings such coherence to the purpose of the big picture of life. In my opinion, it's a top five must-read for all Christians. Now, that has to make you pretty encouraged, Bill.
It does. Well, you know, and the thing is, the book, I think, never really quite took off the way the publisher had hoped. So I'm grateful to you, Hank, that you're giving it a second shot here.
Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing on a personal level. When you asked me for an endorsement for the book, I did an endorsement. I read the book quickly, and then I kind of forgot about it. You get busy, you do this and that, sure, and the other thing. And then I got back to the book for some reason or other. It was laying on my desk. I got back to the book. I reread it. And when I reread it, I thought, my goodness, I didn't do justice to this book. And I hope a lot of people will have that exact same experience, that they realize here's a treasure, because this is not just a tangential issue. I mean, when we talk about theodicy, it's a big word. It's at least a difficult word for people to grasp oftentimes, but this really is at the root. It's what's driving so many questions that people have about the world, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. It is available through the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute. One thing that I want to discuss before we're out of time, and my apologies to people calling in, Bill Dembski will be back next Tuesday. We'll talk about this issue again, give you an opportunity to speak directly to him. We'll take a few more calls next Tuesday and the Tuesday after that. Again, the number to dial to talk directly to the leader in the intelligent design field, as far as I'm concerned, is 888-ASK-HANK. That translates to 888-275-4265. You'll get your chance to talk directly to him next Tuesday with your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, and I was going to get to something else, but I just had a senior moment, so I forget what it was. Oh, yeah, the issue of chirological versus chronological. We don't have a whole lot of time, but tackle that for a moment, because those are big words, and people oftentimes don't have a radar fix on what they mean.
Right. Well, in English, we just have one word for time, but the Greeks, they had two. They had chronos, which is usually what we mean by time, the sort of sequential one thing happens after another. But they had also kairos, which was time with a purpose, the time for something to be fulfilled. And you can actually get that meaning if you look at Artin Bauer's New Testament Greek dictionary. That distinction is made between kairos and chronos. And so, if you will, kairos, then, the way I develop it, it's God's time. It's how, you know, in the, if you will, the thoughts, the mind of God, how do things lay out? And the way God lays things out in his purposes isn't necessarily, doesn't follow a sequential pattern as our chronological time does. And so, so what I argue is that Genesis 1 really is, in the first instance, it's chirological time, it's God's time, which is not to take away that what's happening there doesn't also happen in chronological time, if you will, but that there is that distinction, and so it actually allows for a reading of Genesis 1 and 2 where, if you will, Genesis 2 is chronos and Genesis 1 is kairos. And so I think it offers some insights into just how God act in the world without being bound to the structures of the world.
Well, Bill, be encouraged. You're making a difference in the lives of a lot of people. I deeply appreciate you and your work, and we continue to pray that God will richly bless and use you for his glory and for the extension of his kingdom in the days coming up. You are a much-needed voice in the Christian world.
Thank
God bless
you. Likewise, I feel the same way about you, Hank.
God bless you, dear friend, and The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World, is available through the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. I think it may well prove to be a Copernican breakthrough, and I say so in my endorsement on the back of this book. Available for your gift, equip.org is the best place to get it in a safe, secure fashion. My apologies to callers we couldn't take. We'll take you next Tuesday right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast with William Dembski.
Thanks for tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'd like to thank William Dembski for joining us today. If you appreciate the equipping answers you receive from the Christian Research Institute, will you please stand with us during the dry summer months with a donation to the ministry? As our way of saying thank you, we'll send you William Dembski's The End of Christianity, Finding a Good God in an Evil World. To donate by phone, simply call 888-7000-CRI or by mail, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Of course, the easiest way to give is by going to our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because truth matters. Many people throughout history have declared themselves the Messiah. So how can we be sure that Jesus is in fact the one and only Messiah? In Hank Hanegraaff's newest booklet, Jesus, the Superstar of Biblical Prophecy, Hank gives seven memorable points of messianic identification that leave no doubt Jesus is the one. As the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle fit together perfectly to reveal a clear picture, so when we study messianic prophecy in the Old Testament, we see clearly the one and only face to emerge, the face of Jesus Christ. As our way of saying thank you for your generous support, we'll send you Jesus, the Superstar of Biblical Prophecy, to give you the assurance that no one but Jesus Christ could walk through the doorway of Old Testament prophecy. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff has put together the best articles from the Christian Research Journal into three books designed to equip you with a Christian worldview and help you become an effective witness. The book entitled What is Truth teaches you to counter the sweet poison of relativism that seeks to destroy truth and the people of the God of Truth. Whose Ethics, Whose Morals weighs the trend of moral relativism and the notion that right and wrong are simply a matter of opinion.
and Islam, What You Must Know, not only presents a true picture of Muslims in our community, but also ways to reach them for Christ. Order What Is Truth, Whose Ethics, Whose Morals, and Islam, What You Must Know for a special package price by contacting the Christian Research Institute at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or you can order this package online at equip.org. That's equip.org.